This week I'm alongside Sean Keegan, and so I've got him in my room. I'm actually on business up in New York, so a special opportunity to sit down with Sean. Sean, you want to warm people up with the sweet melody of your voice?
Sure. Hello, everyone. I'm excited to do this, so let's get right into it.
Let's get into some hot air. So actually, I think the way I have to start this, unfortunately, is with a deep and heartfelt apology. Because, I mean, a lot of pressure comes on me as not only the voice of Hot Air, but also the voice of Blown Coverage, the DC live stream of all of our games down in Washington. And the ADL's done a great job this year of getting a lot of those clips from the games up onto social media. There was a clip of you making a great pass into the end zone, outside, in release, swerving back into bounds after maybe swinging 10 yards out of bounds first. It was beautiful, and I mistook you for John Agan. I don't even really know how I could have mistaken you, because you're on opposite sides of the disc. I just think there's enough...
Not to mention opposite teams, Greg.
Opposite teams, opposite sides of the disc.
Yeah.
And I think it's just maybe enough common assonance in your name, some more vowel sounds, that I blew it. I blew the call. Wind pun.
There you go, right? Start off right and early with that.
And I don't know I don't know if you know, but I think this podcast is riddled with wind puns. I know you're in an Empire state of mind.
I am. I will do my best to, you know, blow the world away here with wind puns.
You almost
a terrible intro. You know, we'll get better, I promise we'll get better.
You almost blew that intro.
I should have gone with that. That was perfect. But yeah, I appreciate the apology. You know,
funny, it's heartfelt.
Appreciate that. Funny to confuse John and I. Agan, Keegan, I guess there's a small similarity there. John, great guy, solid thrower. Don't know if he could have made as an exquisite a throw as you're talking about. But for the record, I don't actually remember the throw.
Okay.
But we'll say John could have done it, and it's an honest mistake, and we'll move past it.
Good. Well, I certainly appreciate it. So I've got a couple questions lined up for you today. And any other things that cross your mind, feel free to throw them out there. Let's have an interesting podcast.
Sure, love it.
The first one I want to cue you up with is, this is your first year in the ADL. So I want to know, you know, we're most of the way through the season right now. You're going to have a postseason in front of you most likely here. But how has the adjustment to the ADL and the adjustment to the Eastern Division in particular, it's a tightly knit pack that's nipping at your heels for the playoffs. You know, how's that treated you? How's the transition going?
Yeah, it's been a blast, to be honest. You know, first and foremost, it's been a lot of fun. I moved back to New York pretty recently, and I wasn't sure if I wanted to play ADL. I wasn't sure if I wanted to play pro at all. You know, I knew I wanted to play club, but I was unsure. I was up in the air.
Ooh.
There we go. Worked that in organically.
He's on fire.
I was a bit unsure about whether I wanted to do the pro stuff or not. And then I started talking to some of the New York guys. Got convinced to be, you know, an awesome opportunity. You know, get acclimated to Ultimate again after not playing for a bit. And so I decided ADL because I've played MLU in the past, and I've kind of admired AUDL from afar. And you know, I thought about playing for the Breeze before, it just didn't happen.
And actually, if we could actually pause on that, you admiring kind of from afar, I'm going to ask, you know, if anyone's on Twitter and they want to tweet at the DC Breeze with some fan fiction art of you admiring the AUDL from a distance, overlooking a bluff or something with that, just a glint in your eyes, I think that's a good visual for me.
I would love to see that too, for the record. Let's get that going.
Good. So then you got into it.
Yeah.
And so then how has it treated you in those moments on the field?
It is different. It's, you know, one of the things I really like about the AUDL is there's a lot of teams, right? And we're kind of in our own unique pocket in the East Division here. You know, we play, you know, the same five teams, which is cool, but we know there's so much more going on elsewhere.
Yeah. Right?
There's the, you know, the Roughnecks, which are doing really cool things. There's the teams out in California that are, like, constantly changing and, you know, who's the best. And so just knowing that's going on is really cool and interesting. You know, specifically to our East Division, it's just been a lot of fun. I feel like I know a lot of the guys really well. You know, I've heard a lot of the names, especially the Canada guys. You know, I've heard a lot of their names, but haven't gotten the opportunity to play a lot of them.
Yeah.
So it's been really cool to play them, see them on the field, and kind of be involved with the ADL in that regard.
Yeah, certainly kind of the homecoming to the East for you as a guy that went to University of Delaware, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the old faces maybe you played against in the past, you're coming back East and seeing them, you know, smacked with a hammer and scattered about on different professional teams. It's kind of cool.
For sure. Yeah.
So, but talk to me a little bit more about kind of some of the in-game stuff. Like, there are some subtle rule changes, and I've talked about them on Hot Air before, but I think you might have your own personal take. Tell me about some of kind of the AUDLisms or the features of the facets of the pro game that and how you react to them and how you exploit or, I don't know, challenged by adjusting to them.
Sure. I mean, one of the biggest things is, especially with the Empire right now, I'm playing center handler a good bit.
Yeah.
And so when I get the disc center to me, DC especially will come down and kind of like double team that first look. And it's totally different than anything you've seen, in club. Like, that just, it's illegal in club, so it's...
So you don't see it a lot.
You do see it sometimes, sure. But yeah, not all the time. But yeah, so that's a different thing. Normally that first pass, when you get to look up field and kind of scan everything, the defense is still kind of figuring out what they're going to do and set up. So you have like plenty of options, plenty of lanes, but when they come down and double team you, it's like a whole new thing. You can't just throw a break throw easily. You can't dump it easily because there's pressure, 360 degrees.
Yeah.
So that's a big adjustment. The wide field, it's been talked about a lot. But it's definitely different, right? For as a thrower, there's a lot more room to throw to. You can throw it out the space and have a guy go run onto it. But as a defender, that's where I noticed the biggest difference. You can't take as sharp a lines towards things. You can't, poaching is a little bit less effective because there's so much more space they can put it out to.
Right.
And my favorite rule change is actually being able to sub a whole new team on a timeout.
Interesting. Yeah. So this is one I've thought about a lot recently, actually. So it's interesting you bring it up. Because I almost feel like I like the rule as is, a flexibility to coaches and to strategery that we all can love. But if both teams kind of sub in their full lines, I feel like it doesn't give you a real new look at the game or the matchups. I almost want to see this rule changed to like just the person that called the timeout can call a line. And that way there can be strategy in terms of, oh my gosh, Greg Esser's out in that field, we can exploit that matchup.
Sure. Yeah, that's an interesting way to think about it. I've never considered that.
So what do you like about the rule as it is right now?
So the thing I like the most is you think about some of the real long sloppy points you've seen in club.
Yep. Right?
Like 10 turnovers happen. And that does happen. Like windy game, there could be 10 turnovers a point, and you call a timeout in club, you get 60, 90 seconds, whatever it is.
Yep.
Same 14 guys go on the field. Like you're not going to get much better play after a 60 second rest, right? It's the same thing.
Yep.
Situation in the AUDL, you call a timeout, 14 new guys come on, and it should, in theory, immediately clean up what's happening. You get fresh guys on, you get a fresh look, just a new start to the point. And I think that's, one, good for the fans, and two, good for the players to not have to struggle through and slog through another like sloppy.
Yeah, it keeps a kind of higher level of play, and that's certainly in a highly spectated game, that's a lot more interesting and valuable. You're not watching guys run a marathon.
For sure, right? And we think about the pro games, I think the fans are a big part of that.
As stimulating as marathon spectating is, I apologize to any cross-country runners out there.
Yeah, I watched my brother run a marathon.
Yeah?
I saw him for 30
corner?
Seconds. Well, yeah, exactly. I saw him one turn and took a quick picture, and that was great.
Man, the way he put that right foot after that left foot and just rounded it.
Inspiring.
Okay, so I think those are all very interesting changes to the game.
Yeah, and one last thing, to go back to the timeouts and the subbing, I think it makes timeouts way more strategic, right?
Yeah.
You have two of them a half, and say you use the first one in the first quarter, or say the third quarter, right? We'll make it a more, more climactic part of the game. Use your first one in the third quarter, and it's a game-changing moment. It's like tie game, 19-19, you need to score, you just turned it over. Typically, your O-line is not going to play as good a D as you can get out of seven guys in your best D-line, right? So, you if a timeout is called, rather than have your tired O-line go out there, you can sub in seven fresh guys. And just I think it just makes it more fun, and I think that's awesome.
So, let me ask you this about your time on the Empire this year particularly. In the past, a lot of the coverage the Empire gets is about being the faceless army.
Mm-hmm.
This year, I've been the first to say it as far as I know. I think that old moniker is dissipating a little bit. There are some big names, yourself included, that are maybe making this a little bit more top-heavy of a roster. Do you still buy into the... what happens in a New York Empire huddle? Do you guys still think of yourselves as a faceless army? Do you still think of the Empire as a faceless army?
You know, that's a great question and something we haven't really directly addressed. And the way I kind of look at it is when we say the faceless army, I think it's more of a mindset now than anything, right? Uh-huh. We definitely do have some incredible players. You know, the Dross have been on the team for forever. And yep. they're amazing, tireless athletes, really inspiring to watch.
Yeah. One of them is a league leader in D's, or top five at least.
Yeah. Ryan's just been playing unbelievable all year. He plays both lines, plays both ways, leads the team in points played, just phenomenal.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really incredible. But yeah, so going back to like this idea of the faceless army, for us, I think it's at this point just kind of an attitude and a mindset we can buy into where, you know, it doesn't matter if we have guys 1 through 7 on the field at that particular moment,
mm-hmm.
or guys 13 through 20 at that particular moment, right? You know, we're relying and depending and counting on anybody who's out on the field, regardless of whether you're the quote-unquote superstar, newcomer to the team, yeah. or a guy who's been on the team for the 4 years, you know, that hasn't been as heralded as somebody, you know, like Jeff Babbitt, a gigantic name in the game right
sure.
now.
Sure, and just signed, what, 3 short weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah, you know, but, you know, having Ryan Dross not be as known doesn't make him any less effective.
Yeah.
In fact, I mean, like you said, Ryan's leading the league in plus-minus or whatever it is. And so that's kind of how I take it away, is like, we rely so much on the whole depth of the roster, and I think that's more what the faceless army is right now. And I don't want to speak out of turn. I don't know if my coaches or other players would agree, but that's kind of how I view it right
yeah.
now. There's so many guys.
But you certainly could agree that it's not about a team desire to get like some sort of controversial surgery to remove your facial characteristics.
I hope not. I was never told to me that that's going to happen. So I really hope that's not like the end of the season.
It's in
thing.
The smallest font on your
yeah.
contract.
Shoot.
And actually, I just looked it up while you were speaking there, and actually, the Dross brothers are the top two block getters on the Empire this year. Ryan's got 27 and Mike's got 15.
That is, I mean, 27 is almost comical. In a pro league, to get that many blocks against some of the, you know, the best players, it's, man, that just goes to show you how talented both of them are. Mike's missed a few games, so that's probably why he's a little bit less than his brother right now.
Yeah.
But I mean, I had heard how good the Dross were, and I didn't really put much stock into it because I didn't see it myself. But watching them play this year has been truly incredible.
So here's maybe the hardest thing I'm going to ask you to address today. And it's, I mentioned my heartfelt apology earlier. This one's also, I think, going to pull on your heartstrings. You've had 3 heartbreaking losses to the DC Breeze in 2016. Empire played in 3 times. All 3 resulted in a 1-point loss. And I think 2 of them went to double overtime.
That's right.
So talk to me a little bit about, I don't know. I mean, how do I set this up any better? Talk to me about talk to me about your feelings.
Yeah, sure. Perfect. It's a perfect way to start it off. You know, the first thing I'll say is DC is obviously just a phenomenal team, right? I mean, they've got arguably the best coach in Ultimate today.
Yeah, he's coaching in London right now, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, he's handpicked to coach arguably the best team ever put together.
Yeah.
So, you know, with that said, there's really no shame. I think most teams in the world would, in the ADL at least, would trade losing 3 times, you know, by 1 point. It's a respectable outcome against one of the best teams in the league. That said, it also sucks.
Yeah,
to lose 3 times by 1 point.
Right.
But there's nothing but credit to give to DC. In most of the games, they were up, and they were in control of the game.
The one that they were not up was this most recent one, where it was really the Empire's, at the very end, game to lose. You took that game to double overtime by catching a goal with the clock expiring in single overtime. Walk me through, first of all, that catch, and then talk to me about the end of that game.
Sure, sure. So that quarter, well, I guess that period, we'll call it,
sure.
Was truly one of the most entertaining 5 minutes of Ultimate I've ever been part of.
Special.
Yeah, it really was. The fans were into it. The players were all ecstatic. And it was great. It came down to a buzzer beater to send it to second overtime. So we're on that line. That point's happening. And time's running out, right? We're down to 11, 10, 9. And John Wodach has the disc. And you can see him on the replay. He turns back, looks at the clock, sees there's like 9, 8, 7 seconds left. And we're not going to get a much better look than him with the disc looking down in the end zone 10 yards out.
Yep.
So he sees me, and I'm pretty tired at this point. So I've been kind of lazily slogging around the back of the end zone. He kind of makes eye contact with me. Alan Kolick, phenomenal player. He's at Worlds currently.
Yep.
You know, nothing but great things to say about him.
Over there with Dutchie.
So he's hanging out in the back of the end zone, knowing that a hammer look or something funky is coming up because time's running out. And, you know, he's one of the more explosive players you'll see.
Yeah, and a risk taker.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He'll give some space and then take a chance. and then, so John sees me, and kind of like a nonverbal communication happens. He's like, yeah, I'm throwing this. throws the hammer out there, puts it out to space, and, you know, Alan comes flying in. Makes one of the dirtier plays I've ever seen Alan go for.
Throws around his 130-pound.
Yeah,
pound,
you
yeah.
know, thankfully Alan's one of the slender builds yeah. in the game today. But my favorite part about this play, so I do come down with the hammer catch. John throws it perfectly, and I'm able to go attack and make a play.
Yeah,
and Alan kind of doesn't see that I'm swooping into where he's expecting to make the play. And while he's in the air, starts apologizing midair. I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And, you know, he kind of tackles me to the ground, and you could just see his face. He was more upset with, like, having hit me than not made the play.
Wow.
And, yeah, I'm just, it goes to show you, you know, the physical stuff happens, but more so than anything, there's that spirit still alive and, you know, great dude.
Yeah. And I think we've seen that a lot around the professional leagues is both players are moving into a space at the same time. And the contact certainly happens. It's not always nice and clean.
Yeah.
But yeah, good to hear that Alan was spirited to the end in that play.
Yeah.
Here's the $1 million question. In all likelihood, the playoffs that are 3 short weeks away, I believe here, I want to say they'll happen in the late teens of July. In all likelihood, it's going to feature a 4th matchup of the year with those DC Breeze, and between, of course, the New York Empire. How do you squeeze those final 2 points out? What do you adjust? Do you adjust anything? Do you play it the same way? How do you, to quote Joe Madden, get the last 2% out of your roster?
That's the question right now, right?
Yeah.
Before we go too much into thinking about that matchup, we do have to take care of business and make sure we get there. So while we are hoping we get there, we do have to, you know, make sure we win the right games and do the right thing getting there.
Yeah.
What
games do you guys have on tap here?
I believe we've got
You beat Philly last night.
We did, yeah.
And you've got a Royal game in New York?
Yes, and I think that one for us is win and we're in.
Yep.
If we do lose, it becomes a little more challenging. I think we've either got to beat Toronto on the road or I forget the other Canadian team we play on our 4th of July trip. But
okay.
But it becomes trickier if
either,
that happens.
Either Montreal or the Outlaws.
Yes,
Ottawa.
Yeah. And so lots going on for us next game.
Yeah, so that'll be a big home game here in New York City. That's fun.
Yeah.
So I understand you've got
to
get
had to throw that
it's,
in
it's,
there.
It's,
make
it's,
sure
it's
that
a good answer.
Said.
You're looking forward to the next game. The next game's the most important one. But I'm gonna grill you. I'm not gonna
enough,
let you off the
enough.
Hot
yeah,
seat.
Yeah,
the hot
no
seat here in hot air.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. How do you what if anything do you adjust to try to and maybe this is more broad than just the Breeze matchup this year. I'm sure you've been in some big rivalries in the club scene where you just lose to a team by 1 or 2 points every game. You know, what's your approach going into that game knowing that it's going to be so closely contested but you've come up on the short end a couple times?
Yeah, so one of the things with DC, they really do a nice job of, in the very beginning of your play, disrupting it,
mm-hmm.
right? Like I talked a bit earlier in the show here that they come down with a double team and take away your first look. And, you know, we get in our better thrower's hands on that first throw, and then all of a sudden we got to get it out.
Yeah.
You know, and then we're in a disadvantageous position. So I think that's one thing we're going to look to be better at is not getting ourselves trapped in that first throw and making sure we have a look right off the bat.
And that's one that you'll get to, you know, be firsthand in charge of, right? That's your job.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Thankfully, I know some of those guys a little bit. I've been around them. But yeah, so that's something we've thought about in practice about how to be better setting ourselves up initially and kind of counterbalance.
Is there anything you do mentally to prepare for a game differently, knowing that it's going to be such a close one?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
Thanks. The mental aspect of sports is something I think really isn't talked about as much as it should be.
Uh huh.
You know, having watched Game 7 the other night and just thinking about that mental battle that they went through and just watching, like, LeBron just you know,
dig deeper.
Just dig, exactly, right? Dig deeper. And, you know, it's kind of a cliche answer, but I do think if each person is able to give that extra 2% as a team, I think the sum of those individual parts will amount to more than 2% as a you know, a so whole
some
team.
Sort of complex multiplication.
There's got to be something going on, right? Like, I studied math, and I'm sure there's some sort of compounding effect that's going to take place.
This is ultimate interest.
Yeah, right? but no, right? I mean, they're like, you can give the generic try harder, but that's so vague in general, it doesn't mean anything.
Yep.
Strategically, right, we want to, the Breeze is so good at taking away your initial looks. They're so good at man D, and, you know, like a deep throw goes up, you'll see the Breeze get a ton of blocks. Like, it's really nice. It's really cool to see them play in the air. But so that's one thing we're going to be better at, is like making sure we get good deep shots, making sure we move the disc early.
It's interesting to hear you say that about kind of the way the Breeze play too, because I've thought about this as well, as I think sometimes there's a little bit of kind of this rock, paper, scissors match in the Eastern Division, in that teams are not just this absolute value of good or bad, but they complement or counter each other in a certain way. And so you see Montreal every year kind of score this upset victory, or two, I think it's still possible this year, against the Rush. Mm-hmm. And you see that same roster, Montreal, I mean, I guess they upset the Breeze this year on the road too, but it was hardly a complete Breeze roster.
Sure.
I feel like that, I guess what I'm getting at here in a long-winded fashion is that the Royal match up better against the Rush than I think they do against many other teams in the East. And I think even the Empire, you know, I see them as a team that really takes away handler options well. They play great. Mandy, you, your team, I shouldn't say they, take away a lot of reset options very well. Chris Kocher, the Dross brothers to some degree, although I guess they're downfield a lot more.
Joshua Laura is a good example of that.
And I think that particularly, I always think, stifles Montreal. So I feel like you guys are the rock to Montreal's. Mm-hmm. And I'm rambling at this point, but I guess the underlying question to this is, do you think that your tactics or approach to a game change based on who you're playing, or you execute similarly day in, day out, you play your style of offense?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point, right? I think it's funny seeing the kind of the circular pattern of things, like where, you know, we're good at taking this away, which this team is good at, and they're good at that, and so on and so on. For us, we really try to strive to play the same way, you know, and have... We've got a few defensive looks, and we've got a few offensive sets that we try to run, and our mindset is kind of, as long as we do what we're supposed to do and do it well, it will counter the best defense. And, you know, we'll be successful if we perform our game plan, which is generally the same through and through. As long as we do that at a high level, we should be successful. And there are definitely some small caveats, right?
Like,
you know... When Derek Alexander is out there and he's the center handler and you know he's got, you know, all the throws in the world, you know, you shift your defense a little bit and you shift the mark a little bit. So there are some small adjustments you make for each team.
Yeah, speaking of individual names like that, are you the guy out there when you play against the Breeze with such insight of the Breeze roster, calling lines and making matchups? When you do play some D lines, which is rare, I know, but
so I don't play a ton of D, but I definitely am more than happy to give my 2 cents to the coaching staff.
Your 2%, your 2 cents,
I'm very familiar with a lot of the DC guys,
sure,
and so just having known them and knowing their tendencies, knowing what they want to do, it's easy to, well, I don't want to say easy, we've lost 3 games in a row, so clearly it's not that easy, but. Just kind of knowing their tendencies makes it easier to give advice to our defensive guys and kind of guide them a little bit and what will help them be successful.
Got it. Okay, so then talk to me then a little bit more about some of those matchups that you target. You know, who do you think are the big, you know, most important players on the Breeze to stop, and what kind of, I don't know, what kind of player do you put on them? What you say, you know, Alan Kolick has these big around throws, lefty thrower. You know, what kind of mark do you want to make sure is on an Alan Kolick?
Yeah, so Alan's one of the toughest guys, you know, I think in the world to match up on. He's a great example of somebody I think would be a mistake to put your best defender on, because you're just not going to get many blocks or stops on Allen.
Yeah, it's a bridge game. Take your losses where they lie.
I really think so, right? And so, you know, maybe put your fifth best defender on Allen, bump everyone else, you know, up a spot, and then all of a sudden we try to get those blocks on the number three or four guy.
Because Allen's got to throw to someone in the end.
Exactly, right? Like, he can't pass to himself, as fun as that'd be.
So who else in that Empire huddle then? I mean, I'm giving you, I think, maybe a little bit of a floor here, platform, if you will, to call out some of your truck stop teammates. You're playing truck stop this year, mm-hmm. in 2016. So who else do you want to highlight on that Breeze line as guys that the Empire really, you know, strategize about?
Yeah, more so than even guys we're trying to stop, it's trying to avoid them stopping us.
Okay.
They've really done a nice job with their D-line, I think. And I think that starts with, I mean, I think Nicky's done a great job. Nicky Spiva,
sure.
Yeah,
he's another world's player over there in
exactly,
London right now.
Yeah. You know, he's been a great rock for them, plays D-line and kind of controls their offense on the turn.
Yeah, Brad Scott's had some big late-game moments this year.
For
another,
sure.
Another D-line guy. And probably I do talk too much about offensive players, as I think we all are want to do when you see them pile up the stats.
For sure. Yeah, they'll get the flashy stuff. They'll get the numbers.
Yeah. But those two guys for sure. Markham Schaffner's been playing a lot of D-line.
Yeah.
And I think he's got quite a few blocks at this point in the season.
I think just a consistently underrated and underlooked player is David Cranston. I think he's been one of the best players in the club and pro game for a few years now. For some reason, isn't talked about in the same vein and same number of times as some of the other best defenders out there. And, man, he's unreal.
Yeah, Cranston's a really interesting case. I like talking about David Cranston, and I always look up how many blocks he has so far in the season. And it's never that high.
Mm-hmm.
But he plays, I feel like, a different breed of defense in some ways. I think a lot of moments in a game, David Cranston's man gets looked off because of his physical presence, but also because of the style of D he plays. He gets low, he's got good footwork, and he's always in the vicinity that the throw never goes up. Mm-hmm. And he takes away, you know, you might start crediting David Cranston with stalls, because that's the type of defense he plays.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Just a quick funny anecdote about Cranston.
Yeah, let's lay it on me.
Yeah, I forget which year it was. Maybe 2012 with Truck Stop. He played almost solely O-line, and he led our team in defensive blocks.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I mean, it kind of speaks to maybe the not greatness of our O-line, but at the same time, right? Like, to lead a team in defensive blocks on the O-line is something truly special.
And actually, the block leader at this point in the season is none other than Roe McDonald, a guy that showed up on the DC scene only a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
But he'll also, of course, be on Truck Stop with you this year.
Yeah.
And Brian Marshall, number three in blocks for the year. So a lot of stars, you're absolutely right, kind of stud that D-line.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all three of those guys could be the number one defender on a lot of teams in this league. Rowan just continually impresses me. I'd heard about Rowan a few years ago. He played for Boston. Heard he was like an athletic guy, played basketball. But that was about it, like a raw athlete.
Yep.
To see him kind of this year take over games, make, you know, I think the first time we lost to DC in double overtime, he threw a perfect 40, 50-yard flick hook.
I think that's right.
Yeah, and it was like, wow, okay. You know, yeah. Like not only can he play...
Raw athlete no more.
Exactly, right? Like not only is he going to go get you blocks and play awesome, phenomenal defense, but he can make the throw after the fact, and just an awesome teammate as well.
Yeah. So I think that's interesting to hear you kind of comment on guys you know really well, but now you've matched up on. So what's your go-to matchup for yourself? Who's the guy you like to call out?
Let's see. I love to get the better of Cranston.
Yeah, you
know,
sure.
As I rave about him. It's also nice to get the better of him, but it does. I mean, just because it doesn't happen very often.
Yep.
And you know, I've seen him grow so much. Like, I think I was a captain the first year.
He was probably 5'3" when you first met him.
Yeah, you know, he's just a real short guy. he's thankfully hit a growth spurt at 24.
Yep.
But,
yep.
No, just seeing his growth has been so awesome to watch.
Uh-huh.
And to see him kind of progress past, you know, where I am even and where I thought he could get to, and just see him become one of the top players. To still get a better of him once in a while is a nice feeling.
Yeah, I believe that. I believe that.
And the other guy I'll shout out again is Nicky Spive. I think he's just done a great job defensively and is a tough guy to get the better of.
Yeah. A threat on both sides of the disc, to be sure, but he's played great defense all year.
Yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad that I got you in here to record an episode of Hot Air, and I think we'll probably see you in the nation's capital again if you can figure out these Montreal Royale next week.
I hope so. And Greg, I really appreciate you getting me on here. I've had a blast.
And with that said, thanks everyone for listening to Hot Air. Adios.